plate a potential nugget.
Very early in the book, you had my attention with your usage of the elevator problem, and you know how that's a great example of how sometimes reframing can lead us to a much better answer. So can you talk a little bit about just that problem and how that's a good case study for us to understand, you know, the impact of reframing?
Yeah. Well, you imagine that you are the owner of an office building and that the tenants in the building, they are complaining about the speed of the elevator. It's too slow. What many people do there is to take the problem for granted. Okay, the elevator is slow. And then they swing into solution mode and say, how do we make it faster? Do we put in a better motor, or, you know, do we have to go out and buy a new elevator for that matter? What a clever landlord might suggest is instead that you put up a mirror next to the elevator, because of course what happens is when people see a mirror, they look at themselves and they fall in love and they forget time. And the underlying idea there is, what problem are you solving? That a mirror is not necessarily a solution to a slow elevator. A mirror is a solution to the problem that people think it's annoying to wait. So that's it's a simple example, and it really encapsulates that difference between jumping into solution mode, going in and trying to analyze the problem, which is asking why is the elevator slow, and then the crucial difference between analyzing it and framing it right, which is the question, wait, is this really about the speed of the elevator? Or is there something else going on? Is there perhaps a better problem to solve?
And you go on to say in the book, Thomas, that as such, solving tough problems is not always about the details or about being particularly a systematic thinker. It can be equally about interpretation and sense-making, about seeing what's already there, but really rethinking what it means. Can you say more about the statement? It sort of suggests a certain level of perception, a certain level of listening and awareness to what's going on around you.
I
would love for you to expand.
I really, in some ways, link this to the difference between the humanities and the natural sciences, where I noticed many people who are good at numbers, good at analysis, well, they will tend to jump in there. Talking about the elevator problem, they might say, well, exactly how fast is the elevator? Like, how many people are using it? And they're very skilled at that. And they immediately start quantifying the problem and dissecting it. And that's all great. But the other perspective I'm talking about is really holding back from doing that. Like, don't necessarily jump straight into that, because then you become trapped in the first framing of the problem. What this skill set is about is almost taking a step back and noticing, hey, what's going on here? We have a client who's complaining about something, but is that really the issue that we are necessarily dealing with? So there's this strange, I almost like the physical metaphor of thinking, do you delve straight into the problem, or do you actually first take a step back and try to see a broader context, try to reinterpret what you're being presented with, so to speak.
And I love the way you connect it to our wiring and our training. I'm an engineer by training. And you're right. I think there's a temptation to, if you have a hammer, there's a temptation to see the world full of nails and sort of look for nails to hit, but maybe there's something else to be solved. And really resisting the default wiring, which gets you to see the world in a certain way, and look at what else is out there. So I love the way you link it to the way we might be wired because of our training.
Very true. And you're exactly right with the hammer. I think is it Abraham Kaplan or Abraham Maslow who first says it, like, yeah, if you give a kid a hammer, they see everything as nails. It really captures that idea, I think.
The point Thomas makes about all of us being wired to see a problem in a certain way, given our training, is a really powerful one. I'm reminded of an early experience when I was working in the UK. This must have been around the summer of 2005, I think. I distinctly remember it was around the historic Ashes series, with Flintoff and Peterson on one side and Glenn McGrath and Shane Warne on the other. Every match went down to the wire, and England eventually won it 2-1. But during that series, one of the lunches, I remember getting into a conversation with a colleague of mine who had an undergrad in political science. I remember asking him how come he was pursuing a career in management consulting after a degree in political science. I was coming from an Indian context where most people in consulting, including myself, were people with an engineering undergrad, and a lot of them with a degree in management. He went on to say that of all the various branches in Oxford and Cambridge, consulting firms actually preferred political science graduates to recruit. That intrigued me further. When I asked him why, he went on to elaborate that engineering undergrad often prepares people to deal with tough, closed-ended problems, while political science helps you make sense of complex, open-ended problems. The numeracy that a lot of us were wearing on our sleeves was trainable, and a lot of the machines were doing some of that work, but the mindset to look at complex problems is a harder one to crack. I must say I really learned a lesson or two that day. It really opened my mind, the chat with this individual. Back to what Thomas says, we need to ensure that we are aware of the limitations of the way we see a certain situation and ensure that we are opening ourselves to new ways of framing the same problem. Thank you for listening.